All right, we're talking about kids' boundaries, and because my wife isn't here, I'm going to brag on her for a few minutes, and I don't get any brownie points from it, so you know it must be sincere because she's not here to be happy with me. So when we were pregnant with our first, for some reason we decided that the first one was going to be a girl. I don't really know why we got that in our heads, but we're just like, it's going to be a girl, it's a girl, it's got to be a girl. And so then we were really surprised that it was a boy when we found out, like, we had the gender reveal or whatever. And for me, I was like, I was pumped, but I was kind of excited either way. I was like, boy, girl, great, boy, awesome, you know. But for my wife, it was a little bit of a shock because she comes from a very female heavy family. Not that the females are heavy, but that they're just weighted that way. They're very strong personality, and there's a lot. They definitely outnumber the men, and so that was what she grew up with. And so the idea of having a boy was like, what in the world would I do with a boy? Like, how in the world would I parent this child? And I was like, well, that's not so hard, you know. I've been there as a boy myself, and have a brother. And so this was kind of it kind of freaked her out to begin with. But Carrie is actually, hey guys, welcome back. It's so good to see you. But she is, and again, she's not here, so I can say this. I tell her this, but I'm doing it not for points, in other words, right now. She is an amazing boy mom. She just gets it. I don't know how. Like, she didn't take a class, she didn't read a book, but she's just really good with our boys. And I would say that, so we talk about boundaries, like, she does this really well. She understands that boys have to be boys, you know? And so she gives them all kinds of space to do stupid things and get really dirty and, you know, jump off things and burn things, find things, catch things. And she's great with all of that, but she has boundaries as well, usually blood. You know, that's like one of those. And she just does an amazing job. And I tell her all the time, like, you are an amazing boy mom. Like, she just gets it. And, you know, I'll never forget when she started, you know, she's like, how do I tell the story appropriately? So, you know, bathing our boys and fart jokes, like, she's great with that. You know, she'll tell them, she'll get in there with them, and don't tell her I told this part. And so they found a snake the other day, and she doesn't freak out. She's like, googly, what do we feed the snake? You know, so she's great with our boys, and it's really fun just to watch her as a boy mom. And now we have a daughter, and I don't know what to do with that. So whatever she wants, that's what I've learned. No, is that not it? Oh, okay, I thought I was just supposed to just do whatever she wants. But Carrie's amazing with them, and they really do. They just adore her, and they love that. And I've just seen them thrive as boys and getting just to enjoy being little boys and doing stupid things. And she's great with that. And that's really what we're talking about with boundaries, is giving our kids freedom to be kids, freedom to grow and to learn and to make mistakes and to fail and to succeed and to learn independence and responsibility without stifling them. And also without just being like, hey, whatever you want to do is fine. So what we've said over the last couple of weeks, and I'll just quickly summarize this, is we've said there's a few different ways that people try to parent. And one of the ways is we try to control our kids. And it's my way or the highway. You're going to do exactly the way, everything exactly the way I want you to do. I'm going to make all your decisions for you so that you make them right the first time. And there's this authoritarian dictatorship model that a lot of times some families will actually live that out whole hand, like that's just how they do life. A lot of us fall into it at different times and different situations. So nobody's like immune to this, I would say. But that's one approach. And it's, I'm going to control my child and make sure they turn out exactly the way that I want. Okay. And then the other side that we talked about is just this permissiveness, which is, okay, I'm not going to parent you. I'm just going to let you do whatever you want and figure it out on your own. And again, this is something that all of us fall into it at one time or another, I think. And there's different reasons for why we do that. And some of it is we are trying to teach our kids independence, and some of it is we are trying to give them freedom, but we can go too far with that. And sometimes I think that there's a fear that we don't know exactly what we're doing, and so we fail to engage with our kids, and we just sort of go hands off and hope they figure it out. And it's sort of like, Jesus, take the wheel. And what we want with our kids is to, a better way is to create boundaries where we say, hey, here's the safe zone. This is where you can thrive. This is where you can experience, you can try, you can grow, and you can learn. But I'm going to put these safety rails up on either side, and I'm going to tell you we're not going to cross over here, because this is the danger zone, okay? And so there's different areas of life that we can apply this. And so what we've talked about over the last couple of weeks, 2 weeks ago we started with attention, just that our kids need attention, but there's appropriate and healthy ways of giving them attention and amounts of attention that we've talked about. So when we began, we talked about that on the one hand, our kids, every kid is different. Every kid needs different amounts and different kinds of attention. But what every child needs at the heart of it is they need enough attention that they know that they're loved. Like they know that they're cared for. They know that they are safe and that they are secure. So we never want to deny them that attention. Like they need that desperately, but they also need to know that they are not the center of the universe. They believe that already, just like all of us. So we don't need to feed that. We don't need to foster that. And so that there are appropriate times to say, no, you do not get my attention. And no, you can't just butt in and interrupt me when I'm on the phone or when I'm having this other conversation. There's appropriate ways for you to engage and to ask for my attention. And then there's appropriate times for me to say, no, you don't get my attention right now. You should figure this out on your own. You should go and learn to play by yourself. You should learn independence and resourcefulness and how to solve your own problems. And so we don't do our kids a favor on either side if we either neglect them so that they feel that they're abandoned, mom and dad are in the house, but they don't care about me, or that on the other side, we solve all of their problems for them and we're constantly fixing them and doing everything that they need to be done. So we've said there's this boundaries that we want to create. We don't want to fall off on either side. So we want them to be loved and cared for, and we don't want them to think they're the center of the universe. So that was kind of a quick summary from 2 weeks ago. You can listen to the recording online and you can find the notes in the email. If you don't get the email, there's little cards in the back. Fill that out and I'll send you the emails with the notes. Last week we talked about attitudes, and we said that our attitudes, for all of us, they are the outward expression of our inner feelings. And so on the one hand, we are emotional beings and God has created us that way, and that is a beautiful thing. We should be emotional. Like that's part of how we relate to one another. It's a very significant. You can't relate to other people without emotion. You can't empathize with other people without emotion. So we're not trying to stuff emotions, but at the same time, we don't want emotions to simply run rampant. And this is true for each and every one of us. We all know that. But it's true with our kids as well. And so when we think about attitudes, on the one hand, we want to encourage them to feel. We don't want them to not feel. But we want them to understand that, on the one hand, again, they don't bottle it up. And on the other hand, they're not allowing those emotions to control them, because emotions make a terrible God. You don't want to serve your emotions. But we can't control emotions in the sense that the feelings that you're feeling. What we can control is our response to them with attitudes. And so what we're talking about last week is, how do we control, how do we respond to, how do we act out on the emotions that we feel and helping our kids navigate that? So this week, we're moving on. Everything starts with A. So we're going to talk about actions. And in a little while, my wife is probably going to be here, assuming they make it. And then my sister-in-law and her husband, are they out there? And my sister-in-law and her husband are here. And they've been with us for the last 2 days. And so they've watched us parent. And so I've asked them not to yell liar too loudly from the back. Practice what you preach, you know. No, I'm trying to be as honest as I can, but it was actually, I will tell you, just be totally truthful, like it was really interesting thinking through all these things we've been talking about and what I'm sharing with today with, outside observers with us for 2 days. And it's like, what are they seeing right now? Like, what are we doing? It was very interesting. So, and I say all that to say, what I've tried to make very clear each week is that please, 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 do not hear anything that I share as Carrie and I have this figured out. I've said this, but it's worth saying again. Whenever I read parenting books, like it can drive me really crazy because it just sounds like they've got it all figured out and it's so simple. And if you just follow these step-by-step instructions, then your kids will do everything perfectly. And they might put a little disclaimer, but it's so hard to believe it, you know? And so they're not trying to tell you that. And so I'm overstating it or repeatedly stating it. I don't think I can overstate it. That what I'm sharing is us figuring this out in motion. We have young kids. We're building this airplane in flight. And so we're just trying to figure this out as best we can. And some of this is what we've learned in our journey. Some of it is what others who are older than us and have, you know, gone before us with older kids have shared with us. Some of it is things that I've picked up in reading different parenting books and so on. So please don't hear any of this and feel this weight of, wow, we are doing this all wrong. We feel crushed by this. No, the whole point is we're all trying to get better. wherever we are in this journey, we're just trying to get better and we're trying to honor God in how we parent. Fair enough? Pretty good with that? Okay. All right, so let's talk about this for a second. So, let's talk about actions. So what I want to do is I'm going to share a few principles that I think are helpful, and then after that we're going to try something a little bit different and just talk about some of the bad behaviors that we want to address, because I bet we all have a list, and that'll be kind of entertaining in and of itself. But let's start with a few principles when it comes to actions. And some of these are going to overlap with things that we've talked about in the past, so I think you'll start to see how these go together. But where I want to start with this is this principle number one when it comes to actions, okay? How our kids behave is this, that kids, and I was sharing this a little bit about how Carrie is such a good mom, is that kids have to be allowed to be children. Like, you cannot reasonably expect a child to act like a 30-year-old, and we shouldn't want them to. Like, it is part of their developmental process along the way that their brains are changing, they're growing, the way they process, the way that they think, the way that they problem solve, the way they interact with the world, all of that is in motion. And so it's important as we go that we allow our kids to be whatever age that they are. And in that, we want to encourage maturity. We want to encourage and train them and to push them towards whatever that next step is going to be. Okay, so I don't want my 8-year-old acting like my 2-year-old, but I do want my 8-year-old to act like an 8-year-old for the most part. Like, he can have areas in which he's more mature, but there may be other areas in which he's not, and that's okay. And we need to be gracious with our children in that. As a youth pastor, I can tell you that one of the things that we struggle with as adults, especially when our teenagers get to be teenagers, is we start to get impatient with them, and because they're still acting like children. But in other ways, they're kind of like adults, and there's this weird tension there. And we talked a lot about when I was a youth pastor and with our leaders of, okay, you got to play the long game, and you have to look at them as whole people. And you have to look at them as, yes, they are teenagers, and so they're knuckleheads, and they do stupid things, and they say stupid things, and they think stupid things. And we're going to allow them to reside in that space. At the same time, we're going to come alongside them, and we're going to encourage, we're going to mentor, we're going to disciple. And what was fascinating was, as we allowed kids to be kids, they trusted us, and we began to see that through those relationships, they made better and better decisions. So we had this one class, and I will remain nameless, but we had this one class that they were like the biggest knuckleheads I've ever seen. So you have So you have a group of kids who come through and they're freshmen, and then they're sophomore, and they're juniors and seniors. And so you might have one freshman class that they're unusually mature. And you're like, wow, these kids are amazing. This is incredible. I can't believe how we are amazing leaders, you know? We're incredible, and their parents are incredible. And then like their siblings came through, and it was like, oh my gosh, like what in the world? It was just a train wreck. We had a class like that. And everybody, if you go back and talk to the leaders, you don't have to tell them names. You have to just remember that one class. Oh yeah. I mean, it was a train wreck so often. But it was amazing to watch as we were patient and gracious, and their parents did a fantastic job, again, of being patient and gracious. And we watched them. And guess what? When they graduated, they were still knuckleheads. But, man, they made so much better decisions, and we saw so much growth in them. But they were themselves. They were still themselves. They were still knuckleheads. They still did stupid things. But you saw more and more maturity. And I ran into one of them not too long ago, and I was like, oh, my gosh, you're an adult. Like, it was crazy. I was like, this is nuts, you know? I couldn't get over it. So we have to play the long game, and we don't take our kids and go, no, you are going to act like this, and try to advance them. We let them grow. We let them develop, and we trust God in that as we go, all right? I think there's a couple of reasons that we struggle with that. One is because we don't want our kids to make the same mistakes that we did, right? We see our kids making a mistake, and we're like, whoa, 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 I've been down that way. Quick, fix you. And we obviously need to be, one thing we do need to do is be honest with our kids. That's a whole other thing. I think there's a temptation to hide ourselves from our kids and our past from our kids. There are appropriate times, and as they get older and they are mature enough to handle it, to be honest with our kids. Hey, I don't want you making these mistakes because look, I did this and look how this affected me. And that's an important part of parenting. But I think we oftentimes we parent out of fear over what our kids are going to do and the mistakes that they make, and they're going to turn out like us. not recognizing God's grace in our own lives and what he can do in theirs. I think the other part of that is that we catastrophize when it comes to our kids, especially that firstborn, right? It's like, man, little Johnny's not eating his vegetables. And if he doesn't eat his vegetables, he might never eat vegetables. He might get a heart condition. He might die. You know, it's like we kind of freak out. James.
When we went to marriage counseling, marriage counselors told us that's called awfulization.
What's it called?
Awfulization.
Awfulization. Awfulization. Oh, there you go. All right. So catastrophize awfulization. Right? It's this whole idea of like, you know, little Susie doesn't share very well and she's not going to have any friends and she's going to end up not having a job and being homeless and, you know, we just go in that direction. He's making bad decisions. He'll never be a Supreme Court justice, you know. So we have to, you know, we can't allow that fear of that they're going to make our mistakes. They're not you. And then fear of whatever imaginary future we might have for them. It's okay that kids don't eat their vegetables when they're three, okay? You work through that. Every kid goes through that, right? They go on hunger strikes. It's okay. That is a normal process for them as children. They struggle with sharing. That's okay. You work through that. So we don't freak out, though, okay? Number two. We want to coach or train, right, responsibility, not conformity. Was that an amen?
Yeah.
Amen. So this is, to me, this is one of the real dangers of trying to control our kids, is you're essentially taking responsibility on yourself for their actions. So they're not responsible for their actions. I am going to force them to make the right decision and to have the right actions, and therefore, who carries that burden? Me. I'm responsible for them to do the right thing. In some sense, we are responsible as parents, obviously. But what I want to do is, as much as I can, especially as they're getting older, right? So again, all of this is on a trajectory as we think through age. So you think about your kids and your stage and age. What I want to be doing, though, is increasingly encouraging them to take responsibility for their actions, because that's what's going to serve them in the long term. I cannot take responsibility so that they never have it. They never experience it. And then expect them to then make good decisions when they're out of my house. All they've done is learn to do what Dad said. And that's not a good way to teach them. The goal here is not to create mini yous. Okay? Be exactly like me. Do exactly what I want you to do. What we want is for them to grow into responsible young men and women who make God-honoring decisions. And so we're not trying to force conformity. We want to teach responsibilities as we go. And there's a real freedom in that I can hold my children responsible for their actions, and I'm not holding myself responsible for their actions. Because the danger here is that I don't even realize that that's what I'm doing, but in essence, that's what I'm teaching them if I'm controlling everything that they do. That's what I end up carrying for them, and I don't want to carry that for them because I can't forever. All right, number three. We're moving along here. Without love, noise. We're just banging gongs. So 1 Corinthians 13:1, you guys know this passage probably. If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels but have not love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. I was reading a story on Suzuki Ichiro, who's one of the greatest batters in baseball, one of the greatest hitters ever. He just signed another one-year contract with the Seattle Mariners. He's 40 years old. He holds all kinds of records in hitting. The man is a hitting savant. I mean, he's unbelievable. But he also is unbelievably disciplined. I just read an article on him talking about the discipline that he brings to his batting. And every day, 365 days a year, no exceptions, rain or shine, regardless of the weather, he has his hitting routine that he does. And other players marvel at this guy's discipline. It's like, we all just took batting practice, we all just do this, and there Ichiro goes, and he's doing his own routine. This is what he's doing. In the off season, he rents out a stadium in Japan. And he has eight guys who show out there with him, and he has the same routine every single day, Christmas Eve, Christmas, it doesn't matter. Now, where did he get that? He got it from his dad. His dad, when he was very young, started training him to hit, started instilling this discipline in him, taught him to hit left-handed so that he would be that much closer to first base. So he's he's a righty, but he actually taught him to hit left-handed. That discipline now has created Ichiro. It is who he is. It is his religion. It's his obsession. And they have no relationship. None. He doesn't speak to his father. He won't speak about his father. His father is a lonely man who his son won't return his calls. And so that's the tragedy of this relationship, that he instilled discipline. He created his son in one sense into who he is, but it was at the cost of their relationship. And I think that's a tragic story, you know. Maybe his dad would say, well, that's a trade-off. I really wanted him to be the greatest hitter of his generation, and he's close. But, man, that's not what I'm going for. I don't know about you. I really want to have a wonderful and, you know, healthy, loving relationship with my kids all their lives, and I don't really care whether they win any batting titles. And so we need to make sure that as we go, we are communicating love in everything that we do, and especially when it comes to discipline. And so what we want to do as best we can is to separate, I do not like what you've done. I am angry with the decision that you've made. I am upset because of how you've treated me or how you've treated someone else. But you I love. You I love. And nothing's going to change that. And it is so vitally important that we play this long game, again, where if we try to force our kids to act in certain ways, or we communicate poorly that I'm upset with you and who you are, that we'll probably get rebellion, but you might end up with the product that you were going for, but at what cost? And having been a youth pastor and having worked with families for a number of years now, I'll just tell you that what I've seen, the way this plays out in two ways. I've seen the parents who do not communicate love well to their kids, and their kids have turned out well in one sense, and they don't return their calls. I've seen kids who were rebellious for a time because their parents continued to show them grace and love, and the kids continued to rebel, but over time they came back around. And so much of it was due to, if you ask them, my parents never gave up on me. My parents always loved me. They were always there for me. I knew even though I was doing all these stupid things, my parents never turned their back on me. And there's something, this is what we want, right? And so oftentimes, I mean, our kids, and we do the same thing. We are acting out of this desire for love. We're acting out of a need for attention that we are trying to seek in unhealthy ways. And so if we continue to give love and grace to our kids, even though they go off in all kinds of unhealthy ways, looking for that, I really believe that more often than not, and I've seen this play out, they come back around, and that relationship is often what guides them home, that and the grace of God. Yeah, James.
There's a statement by Keller about God. Mm-hmm. Nothing you can do, God loves you more. There's nothing you can do.
Make him love you less, yeah. 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 That's something that I've started praying with my kids more is when we pray for our kids, you know, that they would love and follow Jesus all of their days. And we'll, thank you, Jesus, that you died on the cross for our sins. Thank you that you rose to eternal life. Like, so we'll go through some of the this is the gospel, you know. But one of the things that I've started praying more for my kids is thank you that it doesn't matter what we do. You know, thank you that it doesn't matter when we mess up, when we do things we shouldn't do or think things we shouldn't do or say things we shouldn't do. Thank you that you love us regardless. And because I think that I agree with you. I think that that really is the message of love that's embedded in the gospel. And it's important that they obviously understand the facts of the gospel, but I think that that is a really powerful message for them to hear.
What I'm trying to tell her is that we, Henry and James, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So it's reflected in your relationship with her. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. Yep. So this goes back to, we've looked at this passage in Ephesians 6 a couple of times, Ephesians 6:4, where Paul really lays out, I think, this idea of boundaries. You know, don't exasperate your children, but raise them in the training and instruction of the Lord. And so how do we create loving discipline loving environments where we're communicating that love without just saying, well, there's no need for discipline, but also without exasperating, without alienating our children by trying to control them or being overbearing, stifling. All right, I got two more, and then we're going to do some other things. Four, keep calm and let life teach. So it's really easy. I don't know about you. It's really easy to freak out with your kids. You know, they don't eat their vegetables, you freak out. They talk back, we freak out. They act out, we freak out. They don't share when they're supposed to, and we freak out. I just pick a category. It's just very easy to get upset with them, to react. And so what I have found is, I grew up in a family that for the most part, like fairly volatile at times, and very loving. I always felt loved. I always knew that I was loved. But one of the parenting techniques was basically freak out and kind of like freak you out so that you would never do that again. Okay. So when we were, and I'm being really transparent here. Okay. Anybody else grow up with that? Maybe a few people? Yeah. I see people nodding. Yeah. Right. Okay. I see a few people nodding. It's like, you do that now? Yeah. So, and everybody, I'm sure everybody falls into that category at times. And this is me speaking from my experience. I have younger children. Maybe as it gets older, I'm going to find new things. I have found that to be really ineffective. What I have found, because I've tried it, okay, I'm just being really transparent with you. When our firstborn was, 3 or 4, we tried different things, and honestly, it was a conscious, oftentimes like intentional trial for me. And it was like, okay, if I let myself get really angry and kind of freak him out, like, will that get his attention? And so I tried it a couple of times. And yeah, it worked in some ways. But over time, I just was like, this is not good. For one, I ended up having to apologize to him for how I treated him. Two, I didn't like who it made me, you know, who I was sort of allowing myself to be in that moment, and just sort of indulging my own anger in some sense, right? And I could justify it as, but I'm just trying to fix my kid. And in some ways, I really was, you know, it was a conscious thing. And I remember having a conscious decision of like, okay, I'm not trying that anymore. Like I'm not going that route. And so what I've found is, keeping calm is one really hard for me, but is also oftentimes the most effective way of dealing with my kids. I've got a few different notes here that I want to point out here. Your kids' misbehavior does not have to affect you. It just doesn't. I struggle with this. I'm not saying it's easy, but our kids, when they misbehave, when they do the wrong thing, it does not have to become an emotional burden for us, or it does not have to affect us in that way. For one thing, like I said, you end up setting a bad example and you end up having to apologize to your kids. So that's not always a great way to go. The other thing is understanding that when we respond calmly, we let our kids know that their misbehavior isn't our problem. Oftentimes misbehavior is their desire for attention. This is, I'm going to get mom and dad to engage. I'm going to get them to do what I want through this some sort of manipulative behavior. And our kids are crazy manipulative. We've talked about this. We all are in that sense. And so when I respond calmly, I'm letting them know, actually, your problem is your problem. Your misbehavior is your problem. And I'm going to let you, in one sense, deal with it. Okay. And I'm not going to allow it to affect me. I think that if we try to deal with everything that our child does, and we allow everything to affect us, and we're running around trying to correct everything, then one, it will exhaust us. And two, again, we no longer have these healthy boundaries of space for them to grow. Okay, and we don't want to be helicopter parents, just for the record. It's really exhausting, really exhausting. Maybe you can handle that. I can't handle that. Trying to run around and correct every single thing that they do. Can't do it. Okay, so what about discipline? How do we handle discipline if we're not losing our cool? What do we do with that? Kevin Lehman has a book that I recommend. It's How to Make Your Children Making Your Children Mind Without Losing Yours. And in it, he talks about something called, that he has defined reality discipline. And he gives two principles of reality discipline. Basically, one is you let reality teach your kids. I'm just using life, so I don't have to copyright it. And then the other thing is, he says, creating logical consequences to actions. So, for example, the idea is, like, if your kids don't want to eat their vegetables, let's talk about dinner, because that's, we'll get to vegetables later. So they don't want to eat their dinner. I don't like this. I don't want to eat this. And he would say, great, then don't make them, but just don't let them eat anything else. Yeah. That is life's consequence, okay? You don't have to yell at your child. You have to swat your child. You don't have to, you know, you will do this, and set it up as some sort of a you versus them. It's just, okay. So he would say, take the food, you dump it in the trash, now you're hungry, good luck with that.
Yeah, it's nicely saved, and that's what they get for.
Well, that's what we would do. In fact, I have that in my notes. If you don't like wasting food right here, then it goes in the refrigerator, and I'm like, hey, when you get hungry tonight, your cold macaroni is waiting for you, and it will fill you up. It is so great. Now, I will say, if the dinner time hour is something that you're trying to stress, so, like, I want us to sit together as a family and eat. No, I don't want to eat right now. Then that may be a time you go, well, then this is the chance to eat. You don't get to eat later. So that would be a time that maybe you put it in the refrigerator, but you don't get it out later. Or you can, if you're, it's the next meal time, right? So those are kind of two different issues that center around dinner time. But that's what we mean by allowing the actual circumstances to dictate what the discipline is. When it comes to the logical consequences, again, you're trying to find something that makes the punishment fit the crime. It's not every punishment or every crime gets the same yelling, swat, whatever, you know, losing your temper. It's what is this situation, what does it call for that we can very calmly say, okay, this is your decision. Here's the ramification for that decision. Now, here's what I want to emphasize with this. Keeping your cool in that is very, very crucial to the effectiveness of whatever you've done. Because think about this. If my child says, I do not want to clean my room, and I lose my temper and freak out and say, well, then you don't get to watch a movie tonight. That child processes this as dad's being unreasonable. If I keep my cool and I say, that's fine, you can choose not to clean your room, but that means you don't get to watch a movie with your brothers and sisters. Well, he can't be like, well, dad's just being unreasonable. He's freaking, there's nothing in my demeanor that says that to him. What it says is, this is a logical, natural consequence. I didn't do this. This is what flows out of it. We undermine that. We short circuit that if we lose our cool in the midst of it. Does that make sense? Yeah, Janae.
Are you ever going to say something that no one's paid me to say? So start with that.
Okay.
I'm real time working on this because I also grew up with the freak out people.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I instinctively go to, so I'm having to. And so this year, God called me to start serving as a children's leader at BSF and to start serving in the Wobble Room here on Sundays. And this is going to sound crazy to a room full of parents, but I really encourage you to serve with children because you have way more patience with other people's kids than you do with your own kids.
Mm.
And you don't yell at the other people's kids and you don't lose your temper with the other people's kids. They're not your kids. You only have them for an hour. So you, and I find myself going, okay, if I can stand in a room with 11 2-year-olds and say, hey, let's not hit, that's not a good idea, and I can keep it right here, well, then it's like, okay, now I can take that home. Mm-hmm. And I'm finding it's convicting in my life as I have all this patience with these other kids to, like, get home and try to be more patient with my own kids. So I really recommend, again, no one is going to say this, but you should serve in kids. If you're struggling with this, I really think so.
That's a great point.
You realize that there's nothing wrong with your kid. Like, everybody's kid hit.
Yeah.
So when you are freaking out, like, something's wrong with my kid, she's a sociopath. Yeah. She's not a sociopath.
Yeah.
All 2-year-olds are sociopaths. They all hit each other.
That's right.
So, I mean,
they do not have empathy yet.
Yeah,
they have one.
They have one. They hit someone for the toy, and they get it. So I just think it's good in all.
Yeah. That other child is not being reasonable. The only thing, I have to hit them. They are being unreasonable. They deserve that. Yeah.
It's taking away the responsibility that we feel, the control of, if my kid doesn't act right, I'm failing, because it takes away.
It's not your kid.
So
and then when that mom comes to the door And, you know, I had a mom that asked me, like, did he bite anyone? Did he bit someone at school? And I was like, no, he doesn't bite. He's great here. And it was great for me to reassure her, like, your kid doesn't have some crazy problem with biting. That
yeah.
was a one-time incident, maybe. But, like,
we hope.
I feel like it just equalizes
yeah.
in so many ways. And so it's helping me do these things because I do struggle with keeping calm
yeah.
with my own kids. And yeah. now I feel like I'm doing better. Like I was just telling Maurice, I'm doing better because I have to do it
yep.
with these other kids. And
yeah.
I'm the same person. So, yeah, it'll happen.
That's a great point. And no, I didn't pay her to say any of that. Please do serve in children's. It's great. Yeah, James.
I just want to say, September, I think, made a great point that, yes, we love our kids, so we don't want bad stuff to happen to them. But
yeah.
there's also this sense, as a parent, if my kid does X, Y, and Z, then I am a bad parent.
Yes, that's right.
And I look bad.
And underlying that, is pride,
yeah.
right?
Like, yeah.
So we're, some of it is focused on ourselves,
mm-hmm.
too.
Yep.
And what I found is the things that my kids do that upset me the most are those things
that
if they do, it means I'm failing as a parent.
Yeah, yep.
And the more that I can recognize that and realize
yeah.
that that's really just my pride, what I need to do is focus on them and what's best for them,
right.
how I can mentor them. Exactly.
Like my kid doing something crazy in a store is always more upsetting to me than doing something crazy at home because we're in a store.
Yeah, somebody's seen it.
And
yeah.
feels like judgmental person walking by looking
right.
like you're a bad kid. But then I have to remember, like, my kid's 3 years old in a grocery store. So, not
yeah.
really fun.
No, not great. I mean, I hate being in the grocery store. So,
like, but I'm going to have to remind myself, like, I've put him in a situation where he doesn't have a lot of
mm-hmm.
fun options or whatever. So, what am I expecting? Like you said, what are you expecting a 2-year-old to do?
Mm-hmm.
And he can't be a 20-year-old.
Right.
But
right.
I do find that to my pride that gets me all like, oh, making me look at the back.
Yeah. And that's where the responsibility side of it comes. I think that's what you were saying is like, that's where, again, if we take if we feel this responsibility for our children in the sense of everything they do, everything they say, and I'm owning that beyond just the sense of like, of course, I'm responsible for my children and I'm trying to train them. I'm responsible for their training, but I can't actually make my kids do anything. You know, I can when they're really young in one sense, but that's impossible, right? And so instead, what we want to be doing is recognizing when we take that kind of responsibility on ourselves, that's actually doing a disservice to them. We want them to have that responsibility. But that means if I do that, I'm allowing them in that moment to have the freedom to fail or embarrass me or make bad decisions because that's part of, they're not going to learn that responsibility without the freedom to make bad choices. Right? Yeah, no, it's good stuff. All right, last one. Last one. We're doing all right here. Last one. Heart, not behavior, is the goal or the aim. I think behavior is really, really important. Probably everybody gets this. Behavior is symptomatic of the heart. So we got to be careful as parents that we don't get so focused on the behavior that we lose sight of the heart, which is actually way more significant. Jesus says this, right? It's out of the heart that comes all sorts of sinful desires, murder, jealousy, rage. Like all these things are coming out of the heart. And so the goal is not just that our kids would make right decisions or doing the right thing, I should say, but that they would do it for the right reasons. That has to do with the heart. If my child is making right decisions, but doing it for all the wrong reasons or doing the right thing for all the wrong reasons, that's not a win. Like that will not serve them in the long run. Because as soon as those two things don't align, then they have no reason to do the right thing. So for example, like if my child is learning to share, okay? And as far as we get with our training, it only is, well, I know I'm supposed to share. And out of that, they learn that when I share, I don't get in trouble. I share and I get other things in return. I share and all these things happen, but there's nothing in here that speaks to their heart in terms of like empathizing, showing compassion. Then what I teach them essentially is, okay, what I really want is to serve my own heart, to get what I want. And if sharing helps that to happen, then I'll share. But as soon as sharing doesn't conflicts with serving my own heart and getting what I want out of it, then I have no reason to share anymore. But if we talk about their heart and make that connection with them and help them as they get older, grow in empathy and compassion, then, okay, I'm sharing not because I'm getting something out of it, but because this is good for the other person, and I consider their perspective. I understand where they're coming from, and this is part of maturity. And so what we want is, when we think about coaching our kids and talking about right behaviors, we want as often as possible to connect that back to the heart and say, this is not just about what you do, but it's about your heart. We say this a lot to our kids. I don't just care about what you do. I care about your heart. What do I care about? And, you know, kind of poking in the chest right there. That's it. And as they get older, they're going to understand that better as we go. We're going to try to move on for just a second here. Any other comments, thoughts? Yeah.
I think sometimes, I mean, we struggle with this as adults, but kids really have a hard time understanding why they behave a specific way, why they're doing, why they're hitting their brother, why they're being mean. And what helps sometimes with me, if I can stay calm enough, is to help them understand, okay, why are you doing this? Why are you reacting?
Asking them the question.
Them.
Yeah, probing.
And then
yeah.
Or I'm feeling selfish right now, or I'm tired of him doing that. So a lot of times, me helping them, okay, turn back and understand inwardly what is going on here, helps them understand, okay, this is why I'm doing this again.
Yep.
Doesn't work all the time because I don't keep my cool all the time.
Sure.
But when I can stay calm and do that, especially, you know, they hear me better, you know, like you were saying.
Yeah.
They hear me better, and they can make that connection now. Okay, I'm doing this to annoy him because I want to be alone. I don't want to be around him.
You're helping them process.
Yes.
Yeah.
But they can't automatically make that connection unless you walk them through that. And I'm not saying this as an expert because I still struggle with me. Like, I'm getting really annoyed with my husband or with anyone else.
What is it?
It's the heart of this problem.
Yeah. I think that's a beautiful picture of maturity, right? Is that as we get older, as we mature, we should be able to, part of that is stopping and considering our own responses. Why do I feel this way? Why am I thinking like this? What is the underlying? And yeah, helping our kids process that, as, you know, again, as they get older, that should become, I think, more and more of the conversation. So my 2-year-old, I don't try to help him process a whole lot why he shouldn't, you know, hit his brother. It's like, no, we don't do that. But as they get older, we start introducing, different language to talk about it, talking about being kind, talking about their heart. And then hopefully, eventually, you know, as we go, asking those questions, helping them reflect for themselves, I think is really important. I mentioned a book that I think is really helpful with this. It's called The Whole Brain Child. It's Daniel Siegel and Tina Bryson. I put it in the notes for this past week. But they have a lot to say just about helping your kids grow in self-awareness and empathy and how that works in their brain. But a lot of it comes back to asking these questions as they get older. Okay, you're having this moment. Let's process this together. Okay, why do you feel this way? Why are you thinking this way? And helping them navigate that, I think, is really, really important because that's what we want in the long run. Any other thoughts or questions? We're just going to have to stop here because of time. But, yeah. Yeah.
Care about.
Greater,
have you gotten there
than
yet?
15.
There you go. Thank you. I was like, I don't think I've got old enough. I don't think we're there yet. I mean, it's going to depend on the kid.
He's an elementary teacher, and like our 5-year-old, we definitely discuss that in discipline.
Yeah,
I don't think she really gets it.
Yeah, that's really
8-year-old, it just depends upon the kid too.
Yeah, it certainly depends on the kid. I think that makes sense with the having younger kids and then but also working with teenagers for several years. I can see the whole reverting thing because I see glimpses of it with my 8-year-old. where it's like, oh yeah, I think he understands that a little bit. But I can see when they hit teenagers being like, yeah, never mind. Say, what's that?
Having pets.
There you go. There you go. Emotional
and I think compassion and empathy are one of those things. Like for our youngest, we could see at a very young age that he could be heartbroken.
He feels deeply.
He feels deeply.
Yeah.
And for our oldest, because he's a little bit more, yes. And yeah. He's just very. I mean, that takes work for him to be compassionate. He is so much more compassionate about creatures than he is about humans. Yeah. So we try to, fan that flame, that that's how the Lord has created you to be like that.
Mm-hmm.
Someday he's going to use that. When it comes to compassion for his little brother,
he'll be fine. He'll live. Good. Anybody else? Anything? Final thoughts? Cool. All right. Well, I'll put some other stuff in the notes because we didn't get to all of it, but you can look for that email if you want. And then next week, we're going to talk about activities.